Hello, this is Mel Fabregas from Veritas at veritasradio.com with a special edition. In December 2008, after the release of our very first program, an interview with Milton Torres, a gentleman wrote to me thanking Dr. Torres for speaking out. This gentleman has had a number of supernatural experiences throughout his life and simply wanted to connect more dots in order to find out what he went through. Since then, he has been listening to our program. A few months after our first interaction in December 2008, I was tempted to interview him so he could share his interesting story. However, I felt the time was not appropriate since I had just started with the program and credibility would have been an important factor. It has been over 3 years now, and you have allowed me to stay on the air. A few months ago, I mentioned that one of my goals was to create a Veritas segment called Vox Populi, or Voice of the People. Vox Populi is a platform for people to share their own unique stories, which otherwise would never be heard. We keep hearing how disclosure will one day happen through a world leader. I'm of the opinion that it will not happen that way. Perhaps disclosure will happen at a grassroots level. And when I say disclosure, I'm not only referring to the extraterrestrial presence, but the truth about our own potential. That is what Vox Populi intends to do. If you or someone you know has an interesting story to tell, whether you want to share it publicly or not, we want to hear from you. Email us at voxpopuli@veritasradio.com. That's voxpopuli@veritasradio.com, or visit the contact section of our website. This man has nothing to sell. He just wants to share his truth so that others like him can come forward as well, and so that he can connect dots and find out what really happened to him. Today, I will begin by reading a summary of this man's life. Then next week, I will air a 3-hour interview so you can hear his truth directly from him. He's not asking anyone to believe him, but I can tell you that I've interacted with him for over 3 years now, and his story has not deviated at all. Before you proceed, I can only say one thing. Be skeptical, but don't close your mind. This is the story of Walt Willis on this first edition of Veritas Vox Populi. Dear Mel, abductions are real. Thought I would tell a bit more of the strange life before I go. There were many things about my life that need to be told. I took a refresher course in psychology at the Dare County Community College at the North Carolina Outer Banks, where the teacher tested us in our potential psychic abilities. I got about 20 out of 25 cards guessed correctly. That made me think about why I may have been able to wake up just before the three aliens appeared at my bedside on the farm in Delaware. I think that I caught them by surprise before they were able to knock me out prior to the abduction. Also, there may be a connection of relationship between the aliens and their abductees. I had felt a kinship to them, as if I knew them as family. Maybe, just maybe, they may be from our future and are here to observe and protect. You have to wonder if time travel is possible, and some aliens are just us, many years into the future. Another strange thing I saw was the monster in the Chesapeake Bay named Chessie. Before I saw this thing, I thought that folks were making up a story to get more tourists to visit the area. Now, I'm more inclined to believe that Bigfoot is real as well. Funny how seeing may be the best cure for debunkers. I'm starting to lose hope of ever finding others like myself that have had a similar life. I feel so very alone and so out of place. Most people do not believe aliens are real, or that what I have told them is true. And others think it is not that important if aliens are here on Earth. Still not sure if disclosure would help or hurt humanity. The people of Earth have made advancements in technology, but not in their personal lives with peace and harmony. Have you learned any more about time travel or found anyone like me out there? There must be others that have more information. Here is the report you were asking for that I made for my daughter when she turned 40. I waited a long time to start telling what I know for many reasons. but now I feel it should not be taken to the grave. Thank you for your efforts in trying to inform the world about this very important issue. Signed, Walt. And here's the letter he sent his daughter when she turned 40. I don't want to just leave this earth without telling my story to you about what I know to be true. You will find this very difficult to believe, but I assure you, it is real. I was born in Wilmington, Delaware, in January 1947. First, I'll need to go back to the year 1952, on a farmhouse built by Mr. Blackstone in 1684. As a child of a Polish-born mother that came to America and that served in the Women's Army Air Corps near Roswell, New Mexico, I had a unique childhood. While living with my grandparents on the Blackstone farm in Delaware, I would often visit the old gravesite to trim the grass and say a prayer for the family that built the home I then lived in. My grandparents had fled Poland to escape the Nazi invasion and lived a life of profound faith in God. It is now hard to imagine living on a farm without running water or electricity, but my grandparents knew that lifestyle well. I'll just cover the highlights as an outline so as to get the purpose of this report. To me, my life was not of survival, but more like a normal way to live as an independent person would live during the turn of the century. Chopping wood and to carry water from the well was normal. Born with exceptional hearing and sight, I was able to hunt well, and with the help of a part Cherokee older cousin that taught me how to live like a Native American, I was better able to adapt to living in the wild than most kids my age. My cousin Phil was surprised to see that I could shoot well enough to kill barn swallows in flight. I never told him that I could see the .22 caliber bullets in flight and direct them with thoughts. Who would believe that anyway? Now for the hard part to believe. One winter night, as I was fast asleep in the west bedroom near the stairs, awakening by a strange pulsating hum, sitting straight up, I turned to the left to see these ghostly figures materialize in the next room as they were approaching my bedside. Please remember that we had no electricity and I had never been to a movie or heard a radio show to that point. Two of the creatures looked like the gray aliens you see in the movies, and the one in the center was much taller and looked different. As they got closer, they told me to relax and go back to sleep telepathically. I laid back down and covered my head, thinking they were Blackstone family ghosts. The floating sensation I felt helped stop my nervous shaking as I blacked out. The next morning, my grandmother met me halfway to the kitchen and asked if I was all right. She said that I had sunburned on the left side of my face and looked very tired. I have come to believe that aliens are real and that they have technology that is far ahead of anything we could even imagine. Now the big question is, what do they want with the people of Earth? Many folks will not believe what I have just said, but I can well understand their position. I must now give the readers a warning. This could save your life, so read it well. I have noticed that people that like me do well, and people that do not like me suffer and may often die within an average of 2 years. Do not go on with reading this if you find it to be the rant of a foolish joker. People dying in front of me as they were cursing me is not an easy subject to recount. I'll just say it happened to me a common occurrence ever since I could remember. At the age of 7 or 8, we moved to the city of Wilmington, Delaware, where I befriended a 10-year-old girl named Joanna that I liked to play with. On a Sunday after church, I went to her house to visit, when her father answered the door and cursed me to go home and leave her alone. As I stepped back in shock and frightened, he looked up at me and then fell face first, hitting the sidewalk dead. I tell you this because this same thing has happened to more than 20 others that have been cruel to me in my lifetime. It has been like a guardian angel that has been protecting me all my life, and I don't know who or what it is. Enough said. Now, to the folks with an open mind and not an empty head, I'll continue. The years that followed, I noticed some rather strange abilities that I passed off as just odd, After we moved to Wilmington, about 50 miles north of the farm, we would drive to the farm to visit my grandparents every Sunday. With my sister in the back seat of the new Buick, on our way to the farm, I felt compelled to lay down on the floor with my back to the front seat. The telepathic message was like the one I received from the three ghosts. Moments after laying down, we T-bone another car on Route 13 near Blackbird. Everyone except I was seriously injured and taken to the hospital. The police kept asking why I was not hurt. This was the first of many strange things that I noticed in my life, where I was protected by some unseen force. While life in the city was easier than the farm, I did miss the quiet time alone in the woods. One of the great things about the city was that you could get enough money returning soda bottles for cash and receive enough to pay for entrance to the local swimming pool at Canby Park. The year, I believe, was 1959. While at the park, I noticed about 12 flying saucers to the west of the park. When I got home, I told my mother to call the police to report what I saw. After much debate, she did allow the call. The police were not much interested in what a 13-year-old kid had to say about seeing UFOs. To my great surprise, I had a visit the next day while at my friend's home that lived around the corner from my grandparents' home at 806 Brown Street. John Borowski's father answered the door to find two Air Force people in uniform asking to speak with me in private. My mother stood with the Air Force officer to my left, and the sergeant stood in front as another man entered the room, dressed in black, wearing a hat and dark sunglasses. I was asked to tell what I saw as follows. I saw bright round objects, mostly in triangular groups of three, flying in a manner not like any aircraft known. They were able to stop and turn on a dime, and when they departed to an altitude near space, they took off so fast that they appeared to vanish at about a 30-degree angle into space. Not bad for a 13-year-old kid, the officer said of my story. My SAT science score was in the top 10% nationwide. For the next hour, the Air Force guys tried to get me to change my story, and I was growing tired of repeating myself. I then parroted back one of the officer's stories as a way to make them leave. I noticed the officer look up at the guy in black for approval, as I could see the guy in black shake his head left and right. Now I knew I had to convince the guy in black. I realized that the officer was taking his orders from him. So I came up with a better idea that got the approval from the big boss in the black. The man in black never said a word to me, even after asking him direct questions. He then folded his notebook and left, followed by my mother and the officer. After they had gone, I grabbed the sergeant by his arm and asked him to tell me that the government knows what it was, and I asked him to please tell me that they were not Russian aircraft. He smiled and said, quote, "You're a pretty smart kid," unquote. I told him I would not speak of this again if he would just tell me the truth. He did, and that was the end of it until now. He said that the government would soon tell the American people and asked me to remain silent until that time. It's been long enough, and now the truth needs to be told. Also, and I know this sounds hard to swallow, but I sometimes can see future events and travel outside myself to other locations by thought alone. I feel like I'm being controlled and manipulated by some unseen force. Our move to the suburbs in 1960 was not fun, until I got my driver's license on a Honda CB160. I took karate from Kim in Newark for about 2 years while in high school. Kim D said he was in the book of Who's Who, as second best in the world. I was more famous than Bruce Lee. He had me teach his black belt class after being there for about a year and a half, because I was able to win every sparring match with every student, as well as with Kim, joined by his two best black belts at the same time. I weighed around 140 pounds at 6'3" tall. Remember the story about the flight of a .22 caliber bullet? That was very strange, but true. I was able to see and react quicker than anyone in the school. Kim asked me to go with him to the World Open to be held in Washington, D.C. that year. I think it was 1966. He said he would be driving one of Elvis's Cadillacs. What sold me was the offer to be introduced to his friend Bruce Lee. Green Hornet was my favorite show. He refused to let me drive. Sure enough, when Bruce saw Kim, he came running over to give Kim a big hug. Much to my surprise. Note, I got to stand next to Bruce and Oddjob, Bruce's bodyguard, ringside when Chuck Norris won the Triple Crown, and got to shake Norris's hand after his win. You can see what I look like if you look for the kid wearing a green jacket with two dragon patches. My teacher must have told Bruce about how good I was, because Bruce asked me to do a private sparring match with Chuck. I told Bruce that I was just a white belt. I did not bring my gi. He even offered to give me his black belt if I would fight Norris. I was tempted, but declined. Drafted into the Army on August 3, 1967, and sent to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, for basic training, where I had to fight using padded sticks. I won every fight with knockouts. My first win was with the North Carolina pro heavyweight champion, Bill Chambers. He died from a hard left delivered that sent him flying through the air about 10 feet or more. The boxing coach for the U.S. Army lost an exhibition fight with Bill Chambers a week earlier. The last guy I had to fight was the D.C. area kickboxing champ, 2 years running, and was the third degree black belt. He quit in the third round. I was careful not to hit him too hard after killing Chambers earlier. The medics worked on Bill for a long time to get his heart going again. Thank God he lived. I did not like to fight and complained to the sergeant about having to keep fighting all week long while the losers just had to fight one time. The next week I was told to stand near the edge of the exercise field and wait as the rest of the company went on to train without me. After about 10 minutes, a chopper landed next to me. An officer walked over and asked if I was the guy that beat the Army boxing coach. He said that he wanted me to fly back with him to join the Ranger School, and that he was the commandant of that school. Strange but true. While training at Bragg, I pissed off the sergeant, so he told me to be the first one to jump from the top of the third level of a 34-foot tower, wearing full gear and holding my M14 rifle. I did a complete flip and landed on my feet. But the next five guys were carried off on stretchers, and then the captain arrived to chew out the asshole sergeant. Fast forward to AIT Fort Ord, California, where I had to run 10 miles with our A42 infantry training company. I came in first with two California marathon runners that were gasping for breath as they asked why I was talking normally. I'm breathing through my nose with no sweat. More about that later. Jumped to duty station in Germany, where I got invited to join the Army pistol team. This gets very strange even to me. In Freiburg, Germany, I got the job of photographer. I was told to take a photo of the president of the Rod and Gun Club. I went to the wrong place above the post bowling alley, where the small bore team practiced shooting .22 caliber rifle and pistols. The coach asked me if I wanted to try shooting a pistol, where I said I never shot a pistol, I would love to try that. I got a score of 245 out of 300. I was told that I was now on their team. I was able to put all five shots in the exact center of the target every time. It took the coach a long time to believe his eyes. He even had me shoot at separate targets before he believed. The exact center has an X in it that is white and the size of a .22 caliber hole, so you can see if any of the white of the X is showing. The shot was not exactly in the center. Five shots and no white. I was made to shoot at five separate targets and did the same thing. Beck gave the coach a fit, as he said what I did was impossible because it has never been done before, ever. And that no gun was ever made to do that well, and that even the ammo was not that precise. He left and came back and made me sign and date the target with a note saying that I did not cheat in any way. All of this in front of the battalion commander. About a month later, as I was walking back from the snack bar, two MPs slid their jeep to a stop next to me and asked if I was Willis. The passenger got out and threw me in the back and sped off, telling me that the president was on the phone and wanted to speak with me. As I was being tossed around, I told them to stop with the BS and tell me the truth. They were pushing me up the steps to the coach's office, as I could see the coach and other shooters looking at me with fear. The coach begged me not to say anything that might upset the commander-in-chief, because he did not want to spend the rest of his life with me making little rocks out of big ones. He looked pale and scared. Still thinking it was an elaborate joke, I decided that I would play along. A lady on the phone said that the president was called away on an important matter, and that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff would take the call, and to please stand by. It was a long talk with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs because Nixon was called away to an emergency meeting. Errol Wheeler kept me on the phone for a long time because I told him I was not interested in representing the U.S. in the Olympics. The purpose of the call by the president and Wheeler was to appoint me to represent the USA in the next Olympics. A curious fact, the Army records show that I was ranked as a mere marksman shooter and not a high master shooter. I was very surprised to see that stated in my DD-214 copy, knowing that President Nixon tried to recruit me to represent the U.S. in the Olympics. Errol Wheeler and I had talked for almost a half hour, with the president's offer to appoint me to represent the United States in the next biathlon. Too long to tell the story, but a biathlon is a sporting event made up of two disciplines. In this case, it combines cross-country skiing and rifle shooting. He did say that the FBI lab confirmed four bullets entered the center, but were not able to detect the fifth. I never told the coach that I could see the bullet in flight and could hold the pistol to my side and still make the bullet hit dead center. Strange but true, that's not normal. He asked if I was the same person that the two runners from Fort Ord said beat them and that I had no sweat on my face or body and was breathing normally. How did they know about that? Do they keep files on people of interest? After leaving the Army in July 26, 1969, I was in college when I got home to find a letter from the local FBI office telling me to call them immediately. I called them and they said I was to report to their office right away. Two special agents took me on a tour from the basement to the top floor, where they would introduce me to everyone in the building as they would explain their work at the FBI building. We arrived at boss's office, where I was offered $26,000 a year with a car and credit card if I would join them as a special agent. That was a lot on pay for a young guy. I asked if I could ask my wife and get her approval. He said that would be fine. My wife said she would not move to DC, and that was final. I should have left her, but she was pregnant with my child. The point of this story is to suggest that there is an alien connection to our world that may have powers that are hard to believe or understand. The universe has planets that are millions of years older and others younger than our Earth. If you stop and think about what our future may hold for us humans in the next 1,000 years, you can better understand the potential for the existence of a race of very high advanced humans. Did they mess with my DNA as a child? Are there other people out there that have been altered? And to what purpose? While working in a search for Eric Rudolph, the Olympic Park bomber, with 86 others, as a volunteer at a dark, pitch-black campsite near Andrews, North Carolina, I was tasked with standing guard at the entrance to the park after midnight when I heard footsteps approaching from the parking area. It was so dark that I could not see my hand in front of my face, and there was a person walking at a fast pace toward me without the aid of a light. I turned on my light to see who it was and saw that he had no NVG, night vision goggles, or light, walking where the road had many rocks and tree limbs in his path. He said that he did not need a light. When I asked how he was able to not trip over all the obstacles without NVGs or a light, he replied that was what he wanted to discuss with me. He said that he was told not to speak with me about this, but could not sleep thinking about the issue he wanted to talk about. I said I have a few questions too, but allowed him to begin first. He wanted to know all about my life. When I said, "First, you need to explain how you were able to traverse rough terrain without using a light or NVG," what he said shocked me to the core when he said that he was able to see because I was giving off a glow that could light up half the camp, and it was keeping him awake. He thought I was the freak, yet he was the one that did the impossible. I searched him high and low for hidden NVG night vision goggles and could not find any. Have you ever heard of a person that could see an aura on people? Was I being fooled or tricked? If there are people out there with that ability, can you have them on your show to prove this was not a joke? I would like to confirm this ability to see people that give off light with some proof. Bo Gritz had gathered folks from around the whole country and may have found people with strange abilities. With all of the reported sightings of aliens and flying saucers, why do we still write these folks off as being crazy? I never told my shooting coach that I did a test to see if I could hold my pistol to the side and just watch the bullet in flight and still hit the target. I followed the flight of the bullet to the exact dead center without looking at the gun. Now, do you understand why I have a problem with other folks not believing me? There are many other strange stories about hard-to-believe events, but either you believe or not will make no difference. This is my recorded statement, so others like me will take some comfort in knowing that they are not alone. P.S. A little extra about why I believe there are aliens actively involved on this Earth. In the mid-60s, my science teacher, Mr. Cole, liked that I scored in the top 10% nationwide, and I liked to pick his brain after class while helping him clean up. One day, he asked me what I thought the strongest force in the universe was. I said that it was fusion. He replied, "Guess again." And I said I had no other guess. After a long pause, he told me that it was electromagnetism. He played a cat and mouse game with this conversation for a long time before he revealed his purpose for the talk. He said that he was tasked to stay with friends working on a top secret project at Los Alamos, New Mexico, to get ideas on how to build a new science lab for the new McCain High School. His friends told him that they were building an anti-gravity drive system based on alien technology. I was shocked at what I had just heard from a teacher that was a no-nonsense science teacher. I was asked to never tell anyone about what he was about to share with me. After I promised him, he told me how it worked and what the device was capable of doing. Walt has included a link that you listeners can take a look at. I have it on the website regarding the secret to true anti-gravity. It could reduce the gravitational pull of the Earth by about 89% and produce enormous amounts of electrical energy as well, and it also reduced the effects of inertia and displaced time. Please remember that this was what we had back in the mid-60s. Fast forward to 1999 in north central Idaho, where a friend told me about what he saw fly over our neighborhood. He described a craft the size of 2 football fields that came from the east in a manner that a Star Trek spacecraft would do as it came out of warp drive. It flew west at near hover speed and then departed in a flash to the west. He said it was a triangle-shaped craft with blue painted bottom. My friend works for Boeing and is a pilot. Guess they found a use for the anti-gravity drive. I retired from the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, as a supervisor with a high SSI clearance. SSI stands for Sensitive Security Information, and have had a top secret clearance in the military and as a civilian. I hope that someday this information will be told to the world so that the world will demand to be given clean energy. I do understand why such information must be kept secret, but I worry that the wrong people, for the wrong reasons, are keeping this information to themselves for selfish reasons. At near the end of my life, I feel compelled to tell what I know. I will also pray that my grandkids will be protected, as they have been all these years. I would like to talk with other folks that know more about what is going on with aliens. Most people do not want to look foolish by talking about such things. If we are ever to know the truth, we must tell what we know without the embellishments, just the facts as we have witnessed them may lead to the big picture. Do it for the grandkids before it's too late. Please. Mel, in closing, to the average guy on the street, he will not even believe what you tell him about this stuff. The public will be caught with their pants down. Remember the 200 cops that walked off the job in Mayor Naganland during Katrina? There are many cops that will join us when the time comes. I was a cop in Western North Carolina that was told not to go to work if the excrement hits the fan, and that I would be given the keys to the NG Armory, as well as many other toys and plans. We are not ready to counterpunch at TR3B, but your show is a very valuable asset. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. May God be with you and yours, Walt. And in a few days, I will release the 3-hour interview with Walt Willis. Visit our website, veritasradio.com, for more details. Thank you for joining me in this first edition of Veritas Vox Populi. I'm Mel Fabregas. Until next time, be well, and remember, be skeptical, but don't close your mind.